Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
My name is Marianne de Visser. I'm an adult neurologist based in Amsterdam, the Netherlands. My area of interest is neuromuscular diseases, amongst others, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, ALS, and that is how I became involved in palliative care. I'm a member of the management board of the scientific panel on palliative care of the European Academy of Neurology. And my guest is Astrid Arnesen. Welcome, Astrid, and please could you introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you so much for inviting me, Marianne. It's really an honor and a pleasure to be here. And I'm a family, related to Huntington's disease, as my mother had the disease for many, many years through my adolescence and growing up. And that's why I've been engaged in the community for many years. And the past 6-7 years, I've been president of the European Huntington Association. So that's, in short, very short, me.
Thank you. Yeah, so both in your private life and as a president of the Huntington Association, you are faced with the difficulties that come with this complex genetic disease. I wish there was already a cure for Huntington disease, but as yet there is not. So in a chronic progressive disease associated with a severe burden for the patients and carers such as Huntington disease, palliative care should be provided in order to manage symptoms and often supportive care. And unfortunately, limited data on palliative care are available for people with Huntington disease. Recently, two papers have been published on end-of-life experience of Huntington patients and their families and on the role of palliative care in advanced stage Huntington disease. One paper from the US and another paper by Dutch physicians. What is your opinion on those papers, Astrid? And maybe a second question, what could doctors who have people with Huntington disease under their care learn from these papers?
Well, so I don't want to go in depth in meaning something about those specific papers, but I can say more in on a principle background that for me, end of life is of course an issue in Huntington's disease, but it's really what's challenging for family members and patients is how can we live our life as long as we live? Because of course it gets challenging as the disease progresses, but as most of us and all of us, I hope, really want to live to the best capacity we can every day that we have, is really what we should be focusing on. And I think that's what we try to argue is we need to support families from each different perspectives to do their best in their life to deal with the symptoms the way they are at every stage.
Yeah, and one of the papers, the one from the US, the author suggests that future research should map Huntington-specific symptoms to the course of the illness to give patients and their families more information on upcoming symptoms. And this, of course, will pave the way to discuss their preferences and needs regarding treatment. Do you think that is very important?
Is that what we need? Because in most families, not all, of course, but most patients, most families, they see a lot of patients. They know what's coming. That's why we are so afraid, because we know so much about what's coming and how things are deteriorating and how your capacity will be worsened. So in my opinion, for family members, that's not what we really need the most. What we need, again, is support to deal with how things are and all the fears that we have, honestly.
So their advice, the recommendation, more research, is not a topic for you and for the European Huntington Association. You would like to promote
No, yes, of course. Maybe I sound too, maybe I sound too kind of, I don't know, we don't need it. But I think, of course, we need studies in how does Huntington's disease progress and know and understand more of the complexity of that. That's not what I'm saying we don't need. But I think to cope with living with the disease, that's not first and foremost what we need as family members. We need a lot of research in terms of understanding interventions, yes.
So, yeah, interventions for sure. So you would rather promote implementation of the practice-based guidelines as has been described in the position paper of the Multidisciplinary Treatment and Care Working Group of the European Huntington Disease Network, right?
Yes, exactly. Because we have a lot of knowledge, we have a lot of understanding, we have a lot of experience as well. And we need to make that, you know, better known and definitely taken into practice. So we learn from each other in the community, and healthcare providers really can use the experience that we have and the good experience that are out there and that have really helped people. Because people with Huntington's disease can live, if they get the support they need, they can live a pretty good life, you know.
The position paper states that optimal care, as you just mentioned, for this disease requires a comprehensive and multidisciplinary and perhaps interdisciplinary approach adjusted to the patient's and proxy's individual needs and depending on the stage of the disease. And it struck me, Astrid, that palliative care is not mentioned in this position paper. Is that a term the European Huntington Association would like to avoid?
No, not in principle. But what I don't like, in a way, or what we fear a little bit, is if palliative care, and in general understanding, so far I think it's related to the end of life. Really, you know, late stages of life, where you in palliative care in cancer, for instance. And I think for Huntington's disease and other chronic diseases like ours, progressive, you need to think about, palliative care can very well be the term, because we know it's untreatable up to now, and we really need to be prepared for the progression of the disease. But it's not about ending the life. It's about living the life.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree with you that is something which we, within the scientific panel, like to change that attitude. I mean, palliative care, for instance, in ALS, which is a disease I have experience with, palliative care starts with communicating the diagnosis. Because at that time, you have to tell the patients the prognosis of the disease, like in Huntington, and the same holds true with Parkinson's disease, and in Parkinson's disease, but also in other chronic diseases, there are events in which you start discussing what the patients want and what their needs and preferences are. Yeah, so I totally agree with you that it's not only on end of life, and I think that is going to change within the community of healthcare professionals, but also patients who are dealing with people with chronic diseases. You are...
Yes, and I would really welcome you. Yeah, sorry for interrupting you, because I would really welcome the conception of this, because I think some people who come with Huntington's disease to a doctor, to a neurologist or whoever, and get the diagnosis, they are told there is no cure. And there is no real treatment that can modify the disease progression, which is, okay, a hard message to get. But there are so many things we can do. But honestly, I think many healthcare providers feel helpless, because I can't really do something with the disease itself. So I think if we can really have that more, integrated into people's understanding, the healthcare professionals, that we can do a lot, even if we can't modify the disease itself yet.
Absolutely. I mean, to provide supportive care and manage symptoms is something which is very important in those chronic diseases. So that means, if I listen carefully to you, that there should be education of healthcare professionals who are dealing with people with Huntington's disease.
Yes, that's really needed. That's really needed. And just to share, yes, to have them aware of the opportunities and the help that can be provided or should be provided as far as long as we can. I mean, that's really needed. It amazes me still how many who doesn't know, even well-educated healthcare professionals. But of course, if these diseases are rare, yeah.
You are also a patient representative, Astri, at the European Reference Network, ERN, on Rare Neurological Diseases. And that is a very active ERN. And I noticed that a patient journey on Huntington's disease has been generated and published on the ERN website. Please, could you elaborate on what you would like to achieve with this leaflet and also how doctors can use this for the benefit of their patients?
Yes, it's been something we have been working on for quite some time, and it was published, I think, maybe a year ago now. And what we want to achieve with it is really to make a very simple and also visual, clear overview of the complexity of the disease, and that there is not just one patient, there is always a family when somebody is HD affected. So what we hope is to, at a glimpse, so to speak, that the healthcare professional or whoever who learns about this disease and are supposed to help somebody can get an understanding of, okay, there is a lot of things we need to keep an eye on here and to maybe ask about and to see how we can support this family and this patient when it happens. So it's really for people to bring to their GP or whoever they are in touch with to give them an opportunity to very easily try to understand some of the complexities.
Yeah, I think it looks very appealing as a visual, and it's quite clear with several points of drawing attention to the stages of the disease. Could you elaborate a bit more on that?
It's about that. It's not static, the situation, so it always constantly change and you know, gets worse. But also the family members needs to relate to this, the children, all the psychological aspects that are in there, the subtle symptoms that are really hard to deal with. So we have tried to really put into that patient journey and illustrate it with some icons and stuff to show that this is not a simple journey and there are many aspects that needs to be, you know, approached in a way for.
Are there any other activities within the ERN on rare neurological diseases which are specifically targeted at Huntington's disease?
Yes, I think the guidelines, which is a really comprehensive document where we're published also and endorsed by the ERN, maybe that's already 2 years ago, which is a very important, much more comprehensive document that we hope that authorities also, you know, will endorse and ask their healthcare providers, the clinics to apply to and follow. So and then it's more to have really the clinicians together in the network, and it has been, you know, expanded quite considerably the last year, which is really, really good. We have great expectations and hope for the network to help spread exactly what we initially said here. We need healthcare providers to understand and know more about the disease.
Yeah, and you and I are both on a working group which tries to establish a postgraduate curriculum. That would help as well, right?
Very much so. Really, really, really important and interesting work. How can we educate, doctors, neurologists, and give them this broad view on what can be given or provided to patients? Yes.
So step by step, we are moving in the right direction.
Yes, and I think really the postgraduate curriculum, and when you mention it, sorry again, is a perfect way to do it, because when people are, you know, in training and really educating themselves, it's a perfect time to try to put this in. Yeah.
I have a last question. As I mentioned, I'm a member of the management board of the scientific panel on palliative care within European Academy of Neurology. What should the scientific panel do to optimize treatment for patients and families with Huntington's disease? And I don't know whether you are aware of some of our options. Scientific panels can contribute to dissemination of knowledge at the educational program of the annual Congress. They can participate in the scientific program, and they can initiate a guideline or consensus statement. What would you recommend that we should do?
I mean, I think to put this on the agenda in your conferences is really important. And again, about the educational programs and things you are doing is really, because of course EAN represents a very high, well-recognized authority in the field. So what you are, you know, highlighting and promoting is really, really important for us, I think, and definitely for the clinicians. If it comes from you, they trust you. You're a trusted source of information. So I think that's really important, a position that you can take and help.
Mm. And how could the European Huntington Association contribute to this?
Yeah, so we do our best in terms of being, you know, supportive in the European Reference Network, also in the Academy to give our voice, to give our input, and to help share information through our networks, you know, which are basically all the Huntington Associations in Europe, and again, their network, if there are things we can help share and spread out.
Is there anything you would like to share with us, Astrid? Something I did not mention previously.
Yes, maybe one thing, Marianne, when we are talking about, you know, you said when a person comes in and get the diagnosis of Huntington's disease or whatever, a really serious disease, progressive disease, you need to prepare for what come, of course, as best as you can. And I think making the life decisions is not just about what kind of information and support can we give, which is really important, but what kind of life decisions can be best for you, given the situation. And, you know, yesterday I saw a recording of a Norwegian Huntington patient telling about this. And she said, when I learned I had Huntington's disease, I knew what was coming because I'd seen my father. I'm mirroring myself in my father's destiny disease. And she said, and I started to dance. I started to dedicate my dance to dance because I wanted to do what makes me happy as much as possible. And I think that was such a nice, you know, story to share. What kind of life decisions can you make to make the best out of the time that you have? So it's just one thing. Yeah.
No, that's a very important message, Astrid. Thank you so much for this delightful conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EANcast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.